Good morning, and welcome back to Kaya Zman and Sa'a B'Sa'a, which I started briefly at the end of the last year in Chorav Zman, but we'll recap because that was Chorav Zman. And I expect this to be, as I noted in the email, a two-week topic. So Sa'a B'Sa'a literally, the Sa'a being a volume measure, measure for measure. We're dealing with the issue of lending commodities, materials, as opposed to lending cash. And we begin with a Mishnah that actually shows up on Ayin Hei Amud Aleph. It's Perek Hei Mishnah Tes. And I'm going to say it outside because you already saw it. You already saw it when we dealt with it last time. But the Mishnah says that you're not allowed to say to somebody else, lend me a kur now, kur being a volume measure, and I'll pay you back with a kur at the time of the goren, at the time of the granary, the time when the grain is in. That you're not supposed to say. You are allowed to say, lend it until my son comes or until I find the key, meaning I have the stuff, but it's not accessible to me right now. That's fine, and that's going to be a heter we'll talk about more next week. Hillel says you're not allowed to do that either. And then Hillel says if you want to lend a kikar for another kikar, if you want to lend a roll in exchange for a roll, you actually have to identify the monetary value and say, I am not borrowing or I'm not lending you a roll, I'm lending you, you know, a dollar's worth of bread. And that's really what it's actually about, is lending a dollar. So in the Gemara on that, Rav Huna says you have to borrow an amount, or you're allowed to borrow an amount equal to what you already possess. Just like the Mishnah said that I'm allowed to borrow a kikar or a sa'a or whatever it is, in the event that I already possess it, it's just not accessible to me. So Huna says, if I have a sa'a, I could borrow a sa'a. If I have two sa'a, I could borrow two sa'a. Rabbi Yitzchak says, I don't even need to have the full amount. Even if I only possess one sa'a, I'm allowed to borrow many kur, which is many, many multiples of the sa'a. Rabbi Chiya taught, supporting the idea of Rabbi Yitzchak. Fine, we don't need that piece of it right now. Ultimately, Rav Nachman quotes Shmuel to say the law follows Hillel, who is strict. Hillel says even if you possess the sa'ah, it doesn't help. However, the halacha does not follow Rav Nachman quoting Shmuel quoting Hillel. Rather, the halacha, in fact, is that yeshlo, if you possess it, that does work. Finally, the closing line of the Gemara is going to be a very important line for us. Hillel says a woman should not borrow the kikar, should not borrow a roll from somebody else, and Rav Yehuda, quoting Shmuel, says that's Hillel's position. But the Chachamim say no, you are allowed to borrow stam and pay back stam. We have to come back to what stam means, but you are allowed to do this loan with the rule. So the basic fundamental concern that we have here, when you borrow a commodity and you pay back a commodity, is that if it increases in value during the period of the loan, it was worth a dollar when you borrowed it, and now it's worth a dollar and 10 cents when you pay it back. You are paying back rivis. That's our basic concern. Tosfos here writes on this, on this Zoyin source base. I highlighted it in bold. He says, "Ava pisha az ein ragil his yakir." This prohibition will apply even if the item that you're borrowing does not normally go up in value, right? Bagels have been, fill in the blank, I don't know, I haven't bought a bagel in a while, but bagels have been 75 cents for the last 10 years, and therefore I can assume I can assume that they're going to be 75 cents tomorrow. I wouldn't have to worry, and Tosfos is saying, no, that's not the way this works. The rule is, even items that do not normally appreciate are under the concern. So I borrow a pen from somebody, it's actually problematic. Now, I shouldn't say borrow a pen, because then I have to make a very important clarification, the difference between halva'a and she'ela. Halva'a is what we're talking about, where you borrow money or you borrow goods which you are allowed to spend and use up, and then you're going to give the person back a different item of equal value. That's where the problem is. As opposed to she'ela, if I borrow an item which I'm going to use and then give back, but it's the item itself, the lender never intends for me to get rid of the item, it's not lao tsa, it's not meant for spending, then none of this is an issue. I can borrow your pen, write with it, and then give it back to you and not have a issue. What I'm not allowed to do is borrow your pen with the understanding that I can give you back a different pen at some point in the future. I'm going away for a month. Can I just take your pen and don't worry about it, I'll give you a pen back later? That's a sa'a problem. You catch the distinction? Say that? Okay.
That's a really practical problem then, because on Shabbos you go next door to your neighbor, borrow a bottle of wine.
You got it. To me, unless you're a professional moneylender, this is your most common application of ribbis. Absolutely. You borrow whatever it is, fill in the blank. Sugar, coffee, bottle of ketchup, whatever it is. Now what do you do? Now, this is avak ribbis. We're not dealing with ribbis kitsutsa here. It's not d'oraisa. Why not? How do you know that this is clearly not?
There's no set time to return it, usually.
There's no stipulation in advance of paying more. You don't know. It may happen, it may not happen. Right? It's very clear that this is a vak ribbis. And indeed, you see that in the Gemara and Daf Samach Beis Amud Aleph, which I brought you in Source Gimel, in which Rav Safra said, the Rav Safra's principle was that the definition of ribbis, which is ribbis d'oraisa, such that our courts would actually reverse it, is the type of debt which a secular court would demand that you pay. And Abaye challenges this, speaking to Rabbi Yosef. He says, what about sa'ah b'sa'ah, which in their courts they absolutely will demand payment back of a sa'ah? If I borrow a sa'ah from Adam, they're going to demand that I pay it back to Adam. However, we don't refund it. Now remember, the rule is we only refund ribbis d'oraisa. So from the fact that Abaye says to Rav Yosef, we would not demand the refunding of the sa'ah, that tells me that it's avak ribbis. It's not ribbis d'oraisa. It's very clear right there. So I mentioned at the end last time, I did see an article from a fellow it wasn't Beis Yitzchak, it was called Tzvi. I think that was why I had that confusion about which volume it was when we talked about it then. It was called Tzvi, it wasn't Beis Yitzchak. But in any case, somebody claiming that the Ritva sees this as a d'oraisa, but he misunderstood the Ritva. What we do have is a very interesting debate about who is guilty in the event that you do sa'a b'sa'a. Normally, as I think Rabbi Zirin discussed in one of the shiurim, we say that all the parties involved in a ribbis loan are guilty for their involvement. However, when you're dealing with ribbis that is derabanan, we generally assume the guilty party is the lender, and everybody else, including the borrower, are not considered guilty. And the Divrei Sofrim in Yerodeh Kuf Samach Beis Aleph notes that the Gemara's language regarding Sa'ah v'Sa'ah supports the idea that the borrower is also liable. If you take a look quickly at Source Dalet, I highlighted it there. It's in the bold. Rabbi Yochanan says, Asur Lilvos Dinar Bedinar. You're not allowed to have such a loan, and they're talking about where the coin is actually considered not currency but commodity. But it says Asur Lilvos. Doesn't it Asur Lahalvos? Right? It says Asur Lilvos. So that indicates that the borrower actually is liable. So according to the Sefer Torah's Ribbis, which I obtained over Ben Azmanim and I'm thoroughly enjoying, the Torah's Ribbis says that there's a Rashba, which honestly I looked up in his source and I cannot find. But he claims that there is a Rashba who says that when you're dealing with Sa'ah b'Sa'ah, only the Malve is liable, despite the Gemara that you see there. Nonetheless, the Malva is the only one who is liable. But what does happen is that the Ritva says, and that's in source Hey, that that if it's true that the borrower is liable, that is proof. I like that ringtone. If it's true that the borrower is liable, then that will work against the idea that with ribbis d'oraisa everybody is liable, and that with ribbis d'rabbanan only the lender is liable. Right? In other words, he doesn't use this as proof that sa'ah b'sa'ah is ribbis d'oraisa. He uses this as proof that your rule is wrong.
Is there a third category?
What do you mean?
Between Rabbanan.
Yes, actually. There is. Beyond Ribbis Drabanan, which we're talking about here, we talked about Ribbis Mukdemes and Ribbis Mukheres, where we said it doesn't even rise to this level of Ribbis.
No, I was talking about one that rises in the middle.
Oh, between them? I don't think so.
Because in that way.
Theoretically, yes. So the point then that I'm trying to make here is, Sa'abasa is definitely Drabanan. Everyone is going to agree that it's Drabanan. And even if you're going to tell me that the Malveh is liable, it's still only a Derabana. That just means that your rule that with Araisa everybody's liable, with Derabana not everybody is liable, only the other lender, that rule is incorrect.
What exactly does it mean that the Malveh is liable?
Meaning the Lova, really. It means that he shouldn't, that by engaging in this, he has violated an Isser as well. He's not liable in the sense of having to pay something.
In terms of the rice, I understand what that means, because you have different Isurim, and the question is who did it and who didn't do it.
Right.
But in terms of
so he is violating an Isur Derabanan, it means we give him Makas Martis. I wouldn't want that. Okay, so let's talk. But that's all just rehash of what we did last time. So now everybody's up to speed. Details of the gzera against sa'ab b'sa'ab. What exactly is this gzera about? That's the next section I'd like to discuss before we get into what the heterim are for sa'ab b'sa'ab. So first of all, there's an argument for leniency to be made here. The Gemara talks about requiring people to engage in loans in which they are engaged in investments, really, in which they could gain and they could lose. We don't want you to engage in a protected investment in which you're always going to get your money back, because that's really a loan with interest. If I give you money, and one of two things is going to happen, either I get my money back or I get my money plus profit back, that's a loan with interest. We want to make sure that your investments are karov lasachar, you could gain, and karov lahefzed, you could lose. So the argument for leniency is that that's true in a sa'a b'sa'a case. It could go up in value, right? You lent me a bagel. So it could go up, and it could go down. So why don't I say this is karov lasachar lahefzed? So the Meiri says this is different. Take a look at source Vav. He says, "Yesh makshim be'isur sa'ab b'sa'ab, aray karov lazeu lazeu." You're close to both. The brackets are what I added. Sharei efshur sheish shav yopachos kamosha efshur b'yaser. It could go down just like it could go up. Right? Commodities don't. But all right. V'choshu karov lazeu. Sorry, they do sometimes. That's fair. Okay,
oh, yeah.
No, that's true. I just feel like they always go up, but you're right. V'choshu karov lazeu lazeu mutar af behalva. If you're close to both, so it's fine to lend. Can go in asek just like when we do in investments. He says ain't no domen. No, but he says it's not the same. Shat asek yesh bo revach. When you engage in an investment, it doesn't look like a loan, because you have to pay the person who is managing your investment. So what you do is, if there are proceeds from the investment, so you give the person who is doing the work with it, gives half the proceeds, or whatever the agreed upon percentage of the proceeds is, to the investor, who is the lender. The Eino Nerek Ribbis doesn't look like Ribbis. In the case of sa'a b'sa'a, I gave you a bagel, you gave me back a bagel, you keep nothing. Right? You keep nothing. That's why it doesn't look like an investment. That's all you're giving is ribbis. So he says, even you're right, technically speaking, it could go up and it could go down. But it doesn't look like an investment, because there's nothing retained by the person who received the bagel. And that's why it doesn't work. You need that retention in order to make it look like a business deal. Otherwise, it just looks like ribbis. It sounds almost like this is a mechzik ribbis argument, which I don't think it really is. But that's what it sounds like.
See, in the common law, there's a thing called de minimis non cura lex. The law doesn't care about small items.
We're going to come to that. We are going to the de minimis principle is coming up. The Yeah? Okay. Zutei dvarim, de minimis in English. But hold that thought. It's going to be very important for us.
Another way of saying it. Don't sweat the small stuff.
But this is
a principle.
Okay. But yes, we're going to have to come back to that as well. The Taurus Ribis also says that there's a Ritva who says that it's that it only works if it's Derech Mekach Umemkar. But again, I looked this up and didn't find it either. In general, what the Taurus Ribis says, you find. I feel bad that the first two times I'm quoting him in Shir are both things that I looked up and couldn't find. But in general, I did find that, you know, his marmakomas are good. But that's an argument for leniency would have been, well, you know, you could also lose. On the other hand, the Nesiva Shalom says there's an argument to be brought to say that this actually is Ribis Kitsutsa. He actually argues that this should be considered Ribis Kitsutsa, in the sense that you're saying, give me back a bagel, and if a bagel's worth more, too bad. And therefore, the Nesiva Shalom says, the Rishonim are bothered. They want to know, why don't we call this Ribis Kitsutsa, since it's fixed from the beginning that you're going to have to give back whatever it's worth, including even much more than what you borrowed. So the Rosh gives a basic answer as to why this is not Ribis Kitsutsa. I brought it for you in source Zion. I'm jumping to his answer after the Sheila, where I bolded. He says, "Kevin delo havi ala Ribis derabanan." This sa'ah case which he's discussing is only Ribis derabanan. Shari chitim hilvahu v'chitim kamosa marzulo. Because it's true that it can go up in value, but fundamentally, you gave a measure of wheat, you get back a measure of wheat. Yeah?
Wouldn't this be even without the sense, wouldn't this be tzad echad beribis maximum?
So, the argument that it should be tzad echad beribis, to me, makes a lot of sense, but oddly enough, and I discussed this a little bit when I gave Shira on tzad echad beribis, this question of, so why, you know, why won't we apply it to this sort of thing? But that's not the answer that they give. Even though you're right, I mean, it sounds to me fairly reasonable to say this is tzedech abribis, it's a transaction which could end up being ribis and could not. Maybe because we saw, when we discussed tzedech abribis, we saw there were some who actually wanted to argue that was a deoraisa. You know, there was a very strong shita to say tzedech abribis is also deoraisa. For those who don't remember, the tzedech abribis was where you extend a loan and there are two possible ways that this could end, one of which would be ribis and one of which would not be ribis. The example, I'm lending you money and taking the field as collateral and saying that in the event that you ever sell this field, sell it to me. So if you never sell the field, there will be no ribis involved. I'm talking at a discount. So in the event that he never sells the field, there's no issue. But if he does sell the field, then it could be ribis. That's tzedech beribis, and one example of it. Okay. Ramban gives a different answer for why this is not a ribis de'oraisa. He says, and this is a very important principle, we evaluate based on the worth of the promised payment, at the time that the loan is extended. What we call basar meikara. And at that point, there is no excess value. That's a very important principle. Take a look at Source Ches, where I brought it for you in the Ramban. We go with what it was worth in the beginning. That's why it's not Ribis Del Raisa, because we care about what it was worth at the time that the loan originated. So Nesiva Shalom says there's an important nafkamina here. There's a very important ramification between the Rosh and the Ramban. In source test, v'yeshla ayin l'shita sam b'din misha lava sa'a b'makom hazol. If a person borrows a sa'a in a place where wheat is cheap, amenas lifroa b'makom hayoker, but on condition that he's going to pay him back in a different city where wheat is more expensive, right? There are certain markets where it's cheaper, certain markets where it's more expensive. So yeah.
Well, that's clear that it's not, you know, unclear what it is.
No, but is this called Ribis Kitsutsa?
One would think so. If you know clearly at the time that it's going to give you back more.
According to Ramban, you're right, because it was worth more from the very beginning. But the Rosh says it's not Ribis Kitsutsa so long as the quantity stays the same. I borrowed a measure of wheat, I paid back a measure of wheat.
But you stated that I want it in more expensive form.
Not a more expensive form, a more expensive place.
We didn't stipulate expense.
But it's,
we stipulated place.
It's an ansadi, it's an undana, it's clear.
I understand what you're saying, but ribis kitsutsa means that you actually stipulated ribis. And the Rosh is going to say you didn't.
This should be tantamount to that, because it's clear that it's going to be.
I understand what you're saying, but the Rosh Lepiani the Daito is not going to agree.
Yeah, what about the expense of having to, you know, to crane it all the way over to the other place?
The expense, and I bring it. We're assuming there are no additional expenses involved. You have wheat in the other location. If there's additional expense involved, then we get into Neshet versus Tarbis issues. The lender didn't receive anything extra back, but the borrower had to shell out extra. So that's a whole other piece of the discussion. The Taz gives me a.
You could come up with a case where it's not about the expense, right? It could be that I happen to run into you. And you borrow something perishable, and I say, look, I don't want to borrow it from you here. I want you to give it back to me when we get home.
We're
on vacation.
That's fine.
But let's say we're on vacation together
in a place where it's cheap,
and milk is, you know, $1 for a gallon, and here's $2 for a gallon, whatever, right? And I borrow a gallon of milk and say, look, I don't need another gallon of milk in Florida. We'll get back to Toronto if you need me.
There's no question that it's going to be worth more. That's the issue.
Right, but that's a good point.
The fact that it's going to be worth more doesn't matter.
Because it is.
It's just not worth it. Be careful.
Go right to the level.
We're not about to permit.
It's about milk.
We're not about to permit Slavisov.
We will
under different guises, but not directly. The Taz goes back to the point that we discarded above, which is, he says, it's power of Lasachar Lehefzid. The reason why it's not de'oraisa is because you could just as easily lose everything, right? If it goes down in value instead of going, this isn't kitsutsa, which to me was really the no-brainer response in the first place. The uncertainty of it all is fundamentally what matters. I brought it for you in source yud. Nirali the derech mekach mutar with sa'ab b'sa'a. Da'ayinu imbocher lo sa'a v'yishayim lo b'sman katsu sa'acheres tachteha. He says, da'avakara of l'sachar or hafzeh. It's close to loss and gain. Now, he's dealing with Derech Mekach, which is a separate point that we have to come back to. But his point here that's relevant for us is that it's Karav L'Sachar L'Hefzid. And therefore, does Afilu B'Halva Ein Kad Yisrael Midirabanan. So even if it's alone and not Derech Mekach, it's only going to be rabbinic. And therefore, if it's Derech Mekach, he says it's going to be entirely Mutter. There's an element here of reliance on uncertainty, which goes back to a Rashi that we saw when we discussed at Echad Beribis as well, regarding the Mashkanta, the Sada, where you have a collateral that's a field and is going to eat out of the field, but you don't know that there's going to be stuff that's going to grow in the field. So that's really the key, so much so that the Nesiva Shalom actually writes, I didn't bring it on the sheet, but it's in Kuf Samach Beis Aleph Dalid, he says that the lack of a guaranteed profit is so important here that even if the lender is insured against losing everything by a special clause against depreciation, nonetheless, it's still not called ribis kitsutsa. If I lend you a bagel and we say, if a bagel goes down in value, then I'm going to want you to pay me back a bagel plus the difference. But if it goes up in value, I want you to give me back a bagel. He says that's still not called ribis kitsutsa because there's no guarantee. I will be tzadach of ribis, but it's not ribis kitsutsa. So now let's ask the question the other way: why are we prohibiting sabasa at all? Once you're telling me that for all these reasons it's not ribis kitsutsa, so who needs examine the rabbanon? So in general, we assume the logic behind the gezera is because if it appreciates, you end up paying ribis. The Levush might be saying the same thing, but the Levush says, and this was the piece in the Nesiva Shalom that I didn't want to go through the entire discussion of, but I wanted to actually note at least. Take a look at the Levush in Yud Aleph. He says, "Disa'a b'sa'a eina elmi d'rabbanan, d'min ha'Torah ein kan iser, d'ap agav d'ika neshech leka tarbis." Mishum ha'chi. He says there is neshech, but there isn't tarbit. And what he means by that is, there is neshech, in that if the sa'ah goes up in value, the borrower loses. Right? The borrower is going to have to obtain a sa'ah at a greater expense, in order to pay back. That's neshech. But, assuming a simple read of the Levush, tarbis means what the lender gains. And the lender doesn't gain anything. Because he'll say, if I kept my original sa'ah, it would be worth more now. I didn't actually gain anything from the borrower. Had I never... Yes, what I'm not doing is confusing everybody with Chavma's other. When I said I'm leaving it out, that's what I meant. The neshech is what the borrower loses. The tarbis is what the lender gains. And in this case, had there been no transaction in the first place, the lender would have gained nothing. His sa'ah is worth what his sa'ah would have been worth in the first place. So the lender breaks even. The borrower loses. The lender breaks even. So we're prohibiting it because the borrower loses. Even though the lender did not gain.
That wouldn't apply, though, in the case in source test, right? Amanas, the brother, Makamayoker.
Because he's gaining because he landed in a different place, unless it's the vacation case, in which case he could have been from the original place. Yeah.
The word marvis is only used with ochel? Is that right?
So we have the pasuk, neshach kesem, neshach ochel, neshach kodavar yishach.
Oh, we do that. Okay.
Yeah. Right. We have ochel with neshach.
Marvis was used with ochel, but the ochel.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, good.
Okay. And then we have tarbis and neshach used without anything. I'll take out my code neshach with tarbis.
Is that how the Torah uses neshach?
So, apparently yes. But if you want to look in the Nesiva Shalom and Kuf Samach Beis, Aleph Gimel, you can get yourself a good headache. I know that I have 2 weeks to cover this topic, and that's why I don't want to spend time on it. If you're willing to be mochel your third week, then we can have a nice discussion. So here's a question. And this goes a little bit back to the comment that was made about a fixed date for repayment. What about where there is no fixed date for repayment? So that the borrower could pay back immediately, or he could wait, theoretically, for the sa'ah to return to its price from the time of the loan. In other words, I borrow a sa'ah from Jeffrey at a time when a sa'ah is worth a dollar. I could pay him back the next day when it's worth a dollar. And if I wait 30 days to pay him back, and at that point it's worth $1.50, you know what I can do? I can hold on to it. There was no fixed date. And eventually it'll come back to being a dollar. Or that's what I assume.
Well, that's
an assumption. I mean, I think it's fair to assume gas prices, plummeted because OPEC played its supply games, but eventually they're going to go back to being $1.40-something a liter. That's why I am not a commodities investor.
Right.
But that's what I'd like to... That's
it doesn't work that way. It's so multifactorial and whatever. You never know.
Agreed. Agreed. But that's the... That's the question, is if there's no fixed date for repayment, is sa'ah b'sa'ah going to be a problem? Or do we say no, because you could pay back the next day and avoid the problem altogether? So the Bris Yehuda in Yud Zayin Gimel quotes the Shulchan Aruch HaRav in Sif Lamed Beis, which I brought you in Yud Beis, who says very simply, Asur l'lvoso afilu l'sha'a kala. You can't do a loan, even for a short period of time, Shema Yisyakir Miyad, because it also could go up immediately. You have no way of
that. He was a commodities trader.
Right. So the Bris Yehuda says, the Bris Yehuda says that this may be a low plug. It may simply be a matter of saying, low plug, we're not going to distinguish. I don't care how long your term is or if there is no term at all. Doesn't make a difference. However, the Rashba, quoted in the Imuke Yosef on Daf Memhei, doesn't know what everybody is talking about. He says the whole Gezerah is where you can pay back any time. Take a look at Sorsia Gimel. He says, I don't know what you're talking about. He says, because of Harash Fazal, De Nira Kaosam Hamafarshim Zal Shapirshu De Lovin Stam, La Fuke Hecha De Kavalos Man Laperaon. We said in the Gemara that we started the Shir with, right? We said, Lovin Stam Uporin Stam. So some explained that to mean you could be Lovin without a fixed time for repayment. That you're allowed to do because you could pay back right away, as opposed to where you say it's going to be after 2 weeks, 30 days, whatever it is. He says, I disagree with those people who say that the problem is specifically if you're koveya a time, you fix the time. Mishum techoshin shema yishtana ashar ben atayim, because we're worried that then it might go up in the interim. The Rashba says that's not what a fixed time for a loan means. When, the Rashba did not live in our banking environment, meaning if I pay back my mortgage early, have a penalty. They don't want me to pay back my mortgage early. However, in the Rashba's day, loans were much simpler. And the Rashba says, when you have a fixed date to pay back a loan, that's meant to protect the lender. To say that by that date, the loan must be paid back. But if the borrower comes after a day and says, I want to pay you back already, you know what the lender says? Thank you very much. Right? He accepted early. It's for the benefit of both sides. It's the benefit of the borrower in the sense that the lender can't come to him early and say, I want payment, I demand payment out of you. In that sense, it's benefiting the borrower. The lender can't force him. But if the borrower wants to pay immediately, he is able to do so. So the point that the Rashba makes, and the point that's relevant for us, is the whole gezerah of sa'ah b'sa'ah is where you can pay back any time. Because there's no prohibition against early repayment. So therefore, he says, don't tell me that sa'ah b'sa'ah is only going to apply if there's a fixed date. Sa'ah b'sa'ah applies even with immediate payback, because all loans are cases of immediate potential payback. There's no such thing as, I can't pay back the next day. You follow? So the question that we asked was, maybe I should permit when there's no fixed date for repayment. So one answer was, the Shulchan Aruch Harav says, no, you may not, and maybe that's a low plug. But the Rashba says all loans could be paid back right away. Of course, the Abbasah applies where you can pay back right away. Yes, Adam. Sorry?
But clearly, that is not the case with real business.
Well, that's the thing. Today, it's not the way loans work. They want you to pay back later because they want the interest, and if they didn't want the interest...
You're talking non-interest.
In fact, there are permutations and combinations, because if you have variable rates, then penalties are different, because it depends when you pay it back.
Right.
It's
a whole different economic environment from that perspective. Agreed. But that's okay, because those also aren't sa'a b'sa'a. They're dealing with cold hard cash.
Then you don't have a ribbit. Today you have a ribbit.
No, it makes a bigger ribbit problem. When you say I can't pay back early, that makes a more problematic thing.
Right. Now it is just charging my ribbits.
So it's a ribbit problem. Well, that's the thing. It's not No, that's absolutely true. Adam.
The question was, perhaps we should allow sa'abasa'a in cases where you have an indefinite amount of time to pay back the loan, because then you can always wait for it to come back to whatever price it was before.
Right.
How does the fact that the Rashba holds that every case where you can pay back right away, how does that...
Because the Gemara's whole statement of sa'a b'sa'a is in a case where you can pay back right away.
Okay, but you can always pay back right away, but the question is, maybe we should allow the sa'a b'sa'a if you have an indefinite amount of time to pay back.
So you're saying the other end of it. Not the immediate, but the other end, because you can wait. Right, the Rashba will not answer the unlimited end of it. He will answer the early payment end of it.
I mean, so there was another side to the question. Maybe you should be able to do it because...
Yeah, it's both sides. Correct. That was, if you take a look at the Shulchan Aruch Harav, right. Okay. So, another question here, just in terms of clarifying the nature of the sa'ah. At what point are you liable for extending a loan of sa'ah b'sa'ah? When does liability kick in? So, the simple answer is the time when the loan originates. That's when liability kicks in. The language in the Gemara is asur lilvos. You're not allowed to borrow. And that's brought in Shulchan Aruch and Kuf Samach Beis Aleph. I brought it for you in Source Yadalit. Asur lilvos sa'a b'sa'a. It's the loan itself that is asur. So that in the following case, I borrow from Yosef, right? I borrow a sa'a from Yosef, and it's worth a dollar. A week later, I give him back his sa'a, and it's worth a dollar. Did I violate anything? The answer is, you bet, because I borrowed sa'ah b'sa'ah. Granted that when I paid him back, I paid him back the same amount I borrowed, it doesn't make a difference. Fundamentally, it's the origination of the loan that is the issur. And if you'll recall, Tosfos and Samach Gimel Amud Aleph, who, when we did Sarecha Beribis, he asked the question, why isn't Sarecha Beribis Sa'a B'Sa'a, right? So that, just the fact that he asks the question, shows that he believes the Yisur is at the time of the loan. Because Sarecha Beribis, the Yisur is at the time of the loan. The Nesiva Shalom notes that this is also clear in the Tosfos Mayan Hei Amud Aleph, Tosfos Halveni, in Source Tesvav. The Gemara there says, if I say to you, lend me a kur now, and I'll give it to you at the time of the, at the time when I collect everything in the granary, is asur. Why? We're worried that it might go up in value, and then the end of the Tosfos, we already saw this Tosfos. Even though if it normally doesn't appreciate. But the point is, it's asur now, lest it go up in the future. But the isur is now. There is a Ramban who is difficult. Because the Ramban says explicitly that there's no Isser at the time of the loan. The Ramban in Shabbos Kuf Mem Chesamud Beis, Source Tesayim, talk about a woman borrowing loaves of bread.
We discussed before, that's for the one where he said the borrower versus the lender.
No, that was the Ritva that we had. But take a look at Shabbos Kufim Chesam and Beis. V'chein Isha to borrow mechaver takikaros b'Shabbos huda asra b'chol shapir dami. This is the discussion the Gemara in this is the Gemara in Shabbos. So leima season to lo kehillel. Is this Mishnah against Hillel? Disnan, because we've learned v'chein ayehel omer lo silva isha kikar lo salva isha kikar lechaver to ashta sena damim. She should not lend out a loaf of bread to her friend unless she says, I'm lending you X number of dollars worth of bread. Shema yukru chidin, lest we go up in value, but imtu bosli de ribis, and then they come to ribis. So Hillel says, you're not allowed to lend out the roll unless you peg it to currency. Afilatim Hillel, to which he says, no, even Hillel would be okay. It depends on whether you are in a location where there is a fixed value for a roll. That's the Gemara. So on that, the Ramban says in Source Yitzayin Kashali, "V'chile Hillel mish'as halva hu aser." Does Hillel believe that it's aser from the time of the loan? V'halo afilu sa'abesa'a eina asura. Even sa'abesa'a would not be aser at the time of the loan. D'leka le'meimar ba mish'as halva avid le'shuma. You don't say that it's evaluated at the time of the loan. Elalova hu adam sa'abesa'a lechatchila. You can lend sa'abesa'a lechatchila. If it goes down, you give him wheat. If it goes up, you give him whatever it was worth from the original time of it. So he makes very clear, Ramban makes very clear, that he believes that you're not in violation at the time that the loan originates. And Ziva Shalom looks at this and he just shrugs. He says, yeah, tzarechim. The Nesiva Shalom on this is Kuf Samach Beis Aleph Dalet, not the Nesiva Shalom that I have there, Kuf Samach Beis Aleph Hey. I don't know why I brought that here. That was one of the sources that I wrote up before Pesach, and honestly, I don't remember what it was doing there. But the basic principle and the assumption that we generally make is that it's from the time of the loan, and therefore, in the event that you make a mistake and you do such a loan, but in the end it doesn't shift in value, doesn't matter, you still lose. You weren't supposed to do this. In other words, if I borrowed the sa'ah from Yosef, and it didn't change in value, and I gave him back a sa'ah, I can't say, good, I'm fine, I still violated sa'ah. Yeah,
but if you're, not this one you're doing before, if you quantify the amount, in other words, that I'm giving you a wheat at, but it's a $30 value.
Yes.
And you have to give me back $30. It's not really Sa'abesa'a.
Correct. And that's where we're going right now. You're anticipating me every step of the way. This is good. So, we now understand. Yeah.
The language of the Mishnah.
Right.
Sounds like.
You could read it the other way, but you could just as easily read that the other way. Usher to do this, lest it go there. You're not allowed to do this. It's Gzeret Rabbanan. Because it
not,
could
not
eventually...
Really coming to repeat for real. The repeat here is only a problem with Gzeret Rabbanan.
No, but we say, lo silva, shema yukuchiten. In a chanami, I won't have paid rebit, but I will have violated Gzeret Rabbanan. In the same way that if I engage in commerce on Shabbos, but I don't write anything down, I still violated Nisr Derabbanan. right? Usur to do mekach u'menkar, lest you write things down.
Okay, but in that case, writing is real malacha. In this case, the rebeat that they would theoretically come to is still not really rebeat.
Well, it's not Rebbe's Ketzutza. Right. I have examined their Rabbanon of don't do this because...
Don't you end up doing
yeah.
rebeat material on it?
Yes. Don't call it Xera Xera.
Not the time now, but I'd like to know if Mishnah Shabbos Gerat, does that help?
No. Next. Okay. So the way that there are different ways in which people count the heterim for Sa'ah B'Sa'ah. I'm going to count it my way. But basically, there are four ways, theoretically, that you can permit doing Sa'ah B'Sa'ah. And here, I'll tell you the four first, and then I'll explain the structure. The four are, number one, if you peg the value of the commodity to currency in the beginning. That's number one. Number two, if it's a small amount. Number three, if you have that commodity, it's just not accessible to you right now, like we talked about already in the Gemara. And then fourth, if yatsa hashab, if the price of this item is already known. Those are our four heterim. The way that different people count the first two differently. Pegging it, I don't consider it to be a heter at all. Rather, I view it the way Jerry does. It's not sa'ah b'sa'ah. You pegged it to a currency. You borrowed $100 worth of bread. Not bread that is worth $100. So I don't even consider it a heter. You didn't do sa'ah b'sa'ah. The second one, davar mu'ah, doing a small amount, some people don't list that as a heter either. They only list yatsa hashar and yeshlo as heterim. There's different ways to do it, but the way I view it is that if you peg it to an amount, it's not sa'ah b'sa'ah. The other three are heterim of sa'ah b'sa'ah. So let's deal with the first one first. This business of making it about the value of the sa'ah, not the quantity based on what it was worth at the time of the loan. So first of all, if you do this, you're good, no matter how you pay back. In other words, when I borrow the sa'ah, from Jerry, and we say, I borrowed $100 worth of wheat, I don't have to give him back $100 at the end. I can give him wheat that's worth $100. I can give him water that's worth $100. It doesn't make a difference. We're good at that point. But this could lead to a very odd situation. Think about it. What happens if I borrow $100 worth of wheat from Jerry, but I took delivery of physical wheat, and wheat goes down in value, and I want to pay him back in wheat? Right? So I borrowed, impose a measure on it. I borrowed a sa'ah of wheat from Jerry, and I'm going to actually have to pay him back 1.2 sa'ah or 2 sa'ah or whatever it is. Everyone in the world is going to be watching me thinking that I'm paying him ribbis. It should be mezik ribbis, but it's not. These are the terms of our agreement. I borrowed $100 worth, and I'm giving back $100 worth. The Taras Ribbis in Perek Zayin, Ha'ara Zayin, says that if we accept the idea that sa'ah b'sa'ah can be permitted with small quantities, which we haven't seen yet, because people aren't makbid on small quantities, then here too it's going to be fine. Then presumably this is fine. That's his answer. In other words, people aren't makbid for this either.
Is there a Myers Ayin principle applicable to ribbis?
Sorry?
Is there a Myers?
Yes, there is a concept of mezik ribbis, yes.
So then it should
be. It sounds like it should be, but yeah. The Taras Ribbis says, just like there's an idea that sa'ah b'sa'ah is okay for things that change in value only in small amounts in either direction, so too here people aren't going to be makbid.
That sounds strange.
It could be double a thing.
Huge.
Right. So the Bris Yehuda notes that in Yud Zayin Ha'ara Yadalid, that some do prohibit paying back with those payros, but he says, I'm not really sure why. And he quotes you the Machane Ephraim, which I brought you on your sheet, because the Machane Ephraim you can cut and paste, the end of Siman Chav Zayin. He says, Ve'echa da'asa adamim, where you convert it into money, V'sheyitein ba'adam kach v'kach hitin, k'mo she'i ashar az, bein hukra bein huzla. You say, I'm going to give you back wheat, whatever it's worth, at the time of the loan is what is the quantity I'm going to give you at the end, goes up or goes down, that's the way it goes. Tzarech lasos lo chitim shava hadam shekitei. You have to give him the amount of wheat equal to what he set. Kumo shekasem ha'aritzal. Ve'av al pisha lakach menu sa'av ha'ashra shehuzo ha'chitin ma'chzir lo sa'av ha'chitzi. Too bad. Ve'ra'isi misha asar ve'in tvarav nechonim. He says, I saw someone who prohibited it, but he's wrong. He doesn't explain why. Why is he wrong? Why is this not Mechzik Ribbis? I have no idea. I don't know what to tell you, except that he says this is what you did. The only answer I can maybe give is because this is the way transactions work. Meaning, if you aren't going to accept this, you're going to destroy commerce. Because what it means is, we're now going to limit you in terms of the currency that you use to pay back loans. You can only pay back a currency which doesn't look like more than what you borrowed. I'm using the word currency loosely. But that's what you're going to tell me. Which I don't think is actually the end of the world, but maybe we don't really want to go in that direction. We'd be expanding Mechzik Ribbis in untenable ways. Maybe that's why we don't want to do this. But that's a very interesting ramification of Asa'a Damim, of fixing the value. The other piece, though, to recognize within this, what if the loan did not include a stipulation of paying a Sa'ah, but it also, and now I know what that Nesiva Shalom was that I had in the sheet. Okay, now I know what the Nesiva Shalom was. I wanted it over here. Okay, what if the loan did not include a stipulation of paying a Sa'ah, but it also didn't stipulate giving the cash value of the original Sa'ah? In other words, we've said that Sa'ah b'Sa'ah is a problem in the event that you didn't fix it according to the value of the saw, right? I can't lend you $100 worth of wheat without saying it's $100 worth. So here we have two poles. In one pole, I lent you a saw, and it goes up in value, and now we have a problem. At the other pole, I lent you a saw and said it's worth $100. Right? And therefore, I'm really lending you $100 worth of wheat. So if it goes up in value, you pay back $100 worth of wheat. Pachos ayos, it doesn't make a difference, whatever it is. But what if we didn't stipulate cash value, but we didn't stipulate that you have to give back a sa'ah either? We didn't have either end. You didn't stop. This takes us back to the ritva that we saw. Right? So go back up to the ritva that we saw in source hey, right? So he said the comment of the ritva there was that there is no isser in extending such a loan because it's done stam. The ritva said there is no isser in extending such a, I'm not going to go back into the text of the ritva, I'm just looking at the time. But he said kol shalava stam is going to be mutter. It can go up, it can go down, whatever it is. But there's a problem here. Because the Erech Shai, the Erech Shai is the one who disagrees. The Erech Shai in Kuf Samach Beis disagrees. I didn't bring it on the sheet. He says that Stam language already requires payment with that measure. Otherwise it would be Mechira. It would be a sale. It wouldn't be a loan. He's very bothered by this idea. But if you take the view that Stam language is unacceptable, that I have to be Osev Bedam, right? That I actually have to fix it to the amount of money, then I have a different problem. We saw a Gemara on Mamdalad Amud Beis. We saw this a while back, in Sadechad Beribis, in which Rav engaged in a loan. Rav engaged in a loan of money. There's a whole story with Rav and Rabbi Chia and all that. I thought I had brought it forward on the sheet, and I'm just looking at it and realizing that I didn't. But I was sure that I had it here. Oh, there it is. Okay, jump down, please, to Yates. You'll see the Gemara there. Oh, it is here on the sheet. Some days. doesn't pay to get out of bed. The it's right here. It's source yitess. I flipped things out of order. It's yitess right now on the sheet. But mitzvah and dalam a base. Vav Rabbi Chiya savar dava tivahavi. This Gemara is talking about the issues of currency, being currency or being commodity. So they say Rabbi Chiya believes that gold is gold is viewed as currency, not commodity. De Rav Oziv Dinri brought to Rabbi Chiya because Rav borrowed money from Rabbi Chiya's daughter, right? All in the family, you know, the whole uncle relationship. Source. Oh, you know what? It's not going to be a test on yours because I eliminated Menasiv Shalom on my sheet. Sorry. So on yours, it's what?
Chaf.
Okay. Va'av Rabbi Chiya savar dava tivahavi. Rabbi Chiya believes that gold is actually currency, not commodity. De Rav Oziv Dinri Mibrate to Rabbi Chiya, because Rav borrowed money or gold coins from Rabbi Chiya's daughter, Lasof Iker Dinri, and then they went up in value. Asla Kamei to Rabbi Chiya, he came to Rabbi Chiya, Amar Le Zil Shlim La Tavanu Tkilin, and he comes to Rabbi Chiya to ask him what he should do, and he says, give her good gold coins back. So if gold is a currency, then it all makes sense. But if gold is a commodity, then that's and it's usher to do that. To which the answer is no, because he already had gold coins with him, and therefore it was what we call yeshlo, a heter we haven't yet discussed. But here's my question to you. If stam doesn't work, then how could Rav have done this in the first place? Right? How did Rav do this deal with the gold coins in the first place if Stam is not allowed? So the Nesiva Shalom that I erased from my sheet, but that you had already up top in Kuf Samach Beis Aleph Hey, suggests that anyone who knows the Isser of Sa'ah B'Sa'ah, anyone who clearly knows the Isser of Sa'ah B'Sa'ah, must intend the loan to not involve a prohibited Sa'ah B'Sa'ah arrangement. This is a remarkable statement that he makes. In other words, you're talking about Rav. Rav knows Sa'ah B'Sa'ah is Asur. So when he made the arrangement, he must have been being Osev B'damim. He must have been fixing it based on what it is worth. As opposed to what I would have answered, which I think is what Adam wants to say, which is why I say that Rav assumes that they are coins, that they're currency rather than commodity. But the answer to that is then he wouldn't, well, good, because that would have been a bad answer. I would have answered that. You wouldn't have. Okay. So the answer is no, because then why did he go to Rabbi Chiya in the question in the first place? Okay, so what was your...
You say there's a difference between a stam, where you're trying to say, change the format of the deal is such that it really talks about the value of the things and not what they are, and the case where I have the coin sitting in my house. Say, Nasaka Omar Lo, Pavinya Jebubnia Jebzabateach, when they're sitting in my house, that's the reality.
Right.
As opposed to the changing it to be Kosek El Damim, which that only exists in terms of our perception of the...
But what question are you trying to answer?
So I'm trying to say, this is not necessarily a proof of the fact that Stam language is going to work or whatever. This could be a separate case.
Because it's...
In this case, the Stam language may be effective because...
Because it's
Yeshlo. The money is...
Right, but the assumption that we have is that we don't know Yeshlo at that stage.
We know it at the end.
Oh, what you're saying is, why is the Nesiva Shalom saying that this proves...
Why don't you say here the
Stam
language works because
in the end we found out, and therefore that was what Rob was thinking all along.
Even though it is putting...
Yeah, it's an interesting question. You know what? I deleted my Nesiva Shalom from here. Actually, I still have it on this one. Hang on one second. Let me just look at the Nesiva Shalom himself since I brought it for you on the sheet. You have it there. It was in Source Yuchas, right? On your sheet?
Yeah.
You're right. Why is he bringing any proof from there? That's an interesting... I agree with you. The answer is that this was a case of Yeshlo. That's all. Interesting. Okay.
It's funny that the gold market is one of the biggest commodity markets. It's like... It's not seen as currency.
Right. Well, that's the part of the Perek Hazav that we skipped. Is that nice long discussion?
Even bigger is the currency market.
What
currency?
But we still the average person doesn't work that way, but the average person knows gold is.
I have to reorder the sushi now, but all right, fine. The last bit that we have to discuss, which we'll start on, but we're not going to finish, is the heter, the first of the three heterim. In other words, asa adamim is your simplest way to deal with sa'a b'sa'a. I'm borrowing X number of dollars worth of ketchup. I mean, good luck, but theoretically, that's your best way. Your first heter is davar mu'at. If what you're borrowing is a small amount, if you go back to the top of the source sheet, source Aleph, Hillel said, "Lo salva isha la kikar la chaverta shetase adamim." Hillel says, "I don't want you lending rolls because we could go up in value." But in the Gemara itself, we had the last statement in the Gemara in source Aleph. The Chacham say you could borrow stam and you could pay back stam, and the assumption is made that when the Chacham say lovin stam upor in stam, they're responding to Hillel about rolls, and what they're saying is you're allowed to borrow rolls, you're allowed to pay back rolls. Why? So we'll see, it's because it's a small amount. Now, I should note, this has to be a homemade roll, not a commercial roll, a bakery roll. The reason why it's not a bakery roll is because we have a separate heter we're going to see later of Yatsa Hashar, where the price is already known. That Sa'av Asa'a is okay if everybody knows what the price of this item is, for reasons that we'll have to get to. So bakery rolls will be covered under Yatsa Hashar. So here what we're talking about is it's a homemade roll where no one knows what the value is. And what we're saying is it's still going to be okay. Now, there's a machlokas we've shown him on how to read this line, as brought by the Beis Yosef. There are two different ways that you could actually read this this line. Almost everyone, Rashi, Tosfos, and many Rishonim, and I brought it for you in the Beis Yosef on your sheets, which I guess is going to be source Chav Gimel for you. I'm not going to read the Beis Yosef now. It's 11:28. But at least see the tour, because he's the one the Beis Yosef is commenting on. So the tour for you, and what you have as source Chav Beis, says, Isha shalav samei chaver takikar, if a woman borrows a loaf of bread from somebody else, Eina tzricha shetasenu damim, she does not need to say it's X number of dollars worth of bread. Even if she doesn't possess any bread, below Yatsa Hashar, you don't know the price of bread, doesn't make a difference. This is fine. And it's because they read the Mishnah and Gemara that the Chachamim are responding to Hillel. And Hillel said, you're not allowed to do a loan of a roll. And they're saying, yes, you are allowed to do a loan of a roll. I'll say it outside now. We'll see it inside next week, I hope. What's going on is that they read Hillel to be saying you're not allowed to engage in such a loan, and they're saying, yes, you are. However, the Rif, and through the Rif, his Talmidim, are actually going to read this differently. And what they're going to say is that what Hillel is saying is, you're not allowed to engage in such a loan. The Chachamim are saying, you are allowed to engage in such a loan only if you have Shar or Yesha. Only if you have one of the other heterim. In other words, even the Chachamim did not permit davar mu'at in general. But apparently, I'm corrupting the way that the Rif is going to read it. We're going to do this next time, God willing. This is where we will pick up. But know that Sa'a b'Sa'a has a potential heter. First of all, don't even enter Sa'a b'Sa'a by doing it based on value. And then second, the first of our real heterim is davar mu'at. If it's a small amount, what Jerry called de minimis, right? If it's a small amount, then we're going to be okay with it, possibly. And that's what we'll come back to, God willing, next week. Clear? Good.